Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. It is Monday night, February 14th, Valentine's Day,
Woohoo!
almost 9:30 p.m. Eastern, and it's time for the Hoops HD report. I am your
Yes.
host, Chad Sherwood. The noisy puppet below me is David Griggs.
Our
To my
gift to you,
sides, up here.
Valentine's Day.
Hold on. Buzzer works, right?
This
Okay.
is what she really wants for Valentine's Day.
Up here at my sides, Joby Forston and David Dorman. John Tytel below as well. We believe John Sleek is going to be joining in. He was having some technical issues. He'll be here as well at some point. But this is the Hoops HD report, so we've got a lot to get to. What do we do with the show? I'm getting confused, Griggs. Or do I need
We go over the major, the regular multi-bid league. So the Power Five plus the five other multi-bid leagues, the Big East, the Mountain West, the Atlantic 10, American, and West Coast.
Okay. And Ohio,
In
Ohio.
Murray State. In Murray
We're
State.
going to talk a little Murray State at the end of the show also, but what I'd like to start off these shows with, as we like to do every show, every week once we get to this point in the season, at least is a little blind resume time, one of our favorite things here. And I've got a pair of blind resumes here that anyone that is watching knows I am a Rutgers alum. I'm going to give you a hint. Neither one of these is Rutgers. It would have been too easy of a giveaway if they were. So that's my
Chad,
only hint I'm going to give.
I don't think these are my blind resumes.
No, Griggs, they're not. I
I
vetoed your
sent you
Ryan
blind
Blaney's very
resumes.
test. Let me, Dorman,
These
let me
aren't my blind
start
resumes.
with you. Left or right, who do you like better? Or are they about even? Because if you look at the metrics are fairly even on these two teams. In fact, their average of all their metrics is dead even at 40 overall.
The metrics are tight. The team on the left has two tier one road wins, which I
Really?
like to see. Yeah, I like to see. I'd go with the left because of those road wins in tier one.
Bad losses. Oh,
Yeah, and I know who the one on the left is, just based on the top road win.
Tytel, how about that? Do you agree the team on the left, or if you want to go team on the right who doesn't have those two bad losses?
Another tough one. A couple things I want to point out is that they're both a bit of home court heroes as they both have losing road records. The team on the right has an atrocious non-conference strength of schedule of 324, but since they also have played a bunch of teams with double-digit nets as opposed to the two tier three losses for the team on the left, I suspect the team on the right is a power conference team and the team on the left is not, but we'll see.
Which way would you go? Would you go left or right?
I'm going to go right because I do not like the tier three losses on the left.
Okay, that's fair enough. The team on the right is a power conference team. It is the Indiana Hoosiers. The team on the left, a team that has suddenly gotten back onto everybody's radar after being dropped off very early in the season, the Memphis Tigers, coming up with one of the two biggest road wins, along with my Rutgers Scarlet Knights winning at Wisconsin this weekend. Winning at Houston, coming out of nowhere, a shocker, really. I thought, Joby, when Memphis went to Houston and won this weekend.
Yeah, now pulling the win at Houston, it was a desperation play. It's kind of funny. In the American, SMU really needed a win over Houston to be legitimate. They got it. Memphis needed the win over Houston to be legitimate. They got it. Well, guys, congratulations. Both of your hard work has pushed Houston to no longer being maybe a protected seed. Congratulations.
Well, let's start off with the American, in fact, because we're talking some Memphis and Tytel. I think you have some thoughts on these Tigers as well,
Yeah, sadly, my thoughts are that I just don't know what to think about the Tigers. So I
right?
was the guy driving the bandwagon in the preseason, and then I stuck with them despite their 6-5 start. Then I gave up on them after they lost three in a row last month. And how do they return the favor to me? They win five in a row, including a 10-point win at Houston. Has to be considered one of the most stunning wins of any team this year. Very tough week ahead. Road trip to Cincinnati and SMU. Bad news, seven of their past eight losses are by 10 points or less, which is exactly what happens when your team is shooting 67% from the free throw line. Good news for the game against the Bearcats is that the only team from Cincinnati who seems capable of winning anything this month is Xavier. Oh, I'm sorry, Stalik, is it too soon? I have them outside the bubble as of now.
Wow. Shot across the bow. That's the thing. Nobody in Cincinnati likes Xavier.
Griggs, what about Houston now? Two straight losses after the one thing we loved about them was that great overall record. And now that's kind of fading a little bit.
The one at SMU I thought was sort of typical. I don't want to say that I was expecting it, but I figured that they probably wouldn't win out and they were going to lose a game, if not that one, a game like that one before the end. The one that just blew my mind was the home loss following a loss against a Memphis team that really hadn't shown many a whole lot of life at any point in the season. I know Memphis has won five in a row, and when you look at what's ahead of them, if they win their next two, I don't think that they're inside the bubble by any means at all, despite like having a really good profile at the top. But if they win their next two, both of which are on the road, that's three straight road wins, all against teams that are really good at home. Well, in the case of Houston, outstanding at home. SMU also tough at home. Cincinnati, yeah, okay at home. But I just don't know what to make of them. Like, are they even a protected seed anymore?
Okay. Well, let me ask this, Dorman. Are we talking three? We're talking potentially three teams now in this conference.
Your fault for letting me get off topic.
Yeah, I was totally asking you about Houston. You answered me about Memphis. So I don't know where you were going with that.
I think at the end of the day, two will be max from the American. Okay. If Houston wins the conference tournament, SMU and Memphis still have a lot of work to do. We just looked at that Memphis schedule. If they can get the next two, then the next three were pretty easy. They can't lose any of those because then it's a bad loss. And then you have Houston again to end the season. So the path is there for Memphis. SMU already has the Houston win on their belt. They still have plenty of work to do, SMU. I do like their team. They have a shot. They're on my board. But as of today, they still are a little out.
Well, they got that huge Memphis game coming up on Sunday, and that's the game to circle. Huge. Amazingly, we're circling a game that does not involve Houston this week in the American. I think the first time we've done that all season. Let's keep things rolling right along here, though. And Joby, we just saw, unfortunately, I know you don't want to do it, but I'll get it over with early here. Right after we were praising Virginia last week for the win at Duke, gave a lot back with the loss at Blacksburg tonight.
Yeah, I mean, gave a lot back in that Virginia needed to continue to win and knock off these things. It was in front of them. They play in their final five games. They had three tier one games, three. Duke at home, Miami on the road, Virginia Tech at home. Then you had Florida State and Louisville. Assuming you can win those Florida State-Louisville games, they needed to win two of three of the tier one wins. Well, strike one. Yeah. And so can Virginia still play their way in? Yes, I do think they can. But, man, do you want to say you're going to play your way in by winning at Miami, beating Duke, and then not slipping up at Louisville and the ever-dangerous Florida State, though, who does have basically every single player looks like Alan Alda because they're in a MASH unit. But, but that Virginia kind of took their shot. On the other hand, I think Virginia Tech, you have to start looking at. They've won six straight now. Now, a lot of that, they've been favored in every one of those. So it's not – they've been beating up on the Pitts of the world, but they're getting the wins over Virginia. Now, Virginia Tech has played themselves huge game against North Carolina for both teams, by the way. Can North Carolina finally get a tier one win? But the But that is a huge game for both teams. And, you know, if Virginia Tech with, as you can see the schedule on the right, if they could put together a very winnable schedule when all those games except maybe the Miami game, all of a sudden the downside to them is the bad record. Wow. Are they going to all of a sudden be talking about it with their lack of tier one wins? I don't know, but, you know, stranger things have happened.
Yeah, Vatek with those great predictive metrics there. But Vatek, Griggs, I also could pull up North Carolina on the left here for you. Because these are, especially North Carolina's a team, a lot of people are putting in. I know you're very upset about the fact that people think North Carolina's a team that belongs in right now.
And the reason I'm upset is, well, look at the damn page. Of course I'm upset. Like, you have to do something. And everybody's like, well, they beat Michigan. Michigan has a losing road record. They beat Virginia Tech. Oh, wow. Okay. Amazingly. If they go to Vatek and beat them, I would actually probably have them somewhere around the first four, very close to the bubble, if not in it. But I'm not convinced by anything that I've seen this year that they can. And at what point does a team have this many opportunities and do absolutely nothing before people conclude the obvious? They're not good enough to do anything, and they don't belong in.
And Dorman, you kind of have a very similar profile here on the right with a third ACC team after Va Tech and Carolina. What about Wake Forest, who also, what have they done?
Great question. And what have they done? The only thing in their tier one is a road win in Virginia Tech. Just to touch on Carolina, again, I agree with everything David said. Again, I'm going to throw in there, they have yet to beat a team that's going to be in the tournament. I just have such a hard time getting them in. When they can't, they had how many chances there against the tier one, and they've yet to get it done. Moving to Wake Forest. Yes.
Same problem. Same problem,
but the next two games at Duke, home to Notre Dame. A lot of people have Notre Dame in or barely right on the bubble out. These two games for Wake Forest can make their season right now. If you can go to Cameron and win and back it up with a home game against Notre Dame, Wake Forest will take care of itself and be in.
Yeah, I agree with David, but where my disconnect is with anyone else, I agree that if they beat Duke, sure, they're in. But they haven't beaten Duke. They've showed no signs of being able to win a game like that at any point.
I think the game against Notre Dame is extremely important. And one of the things that's being lost a little bit is that Bart Torvik came out with an interesting statistic. Of the once in the since the middle of January, of the top 14 teams in the country metrically of how they've played, et cetera, four of them are in the ACC. A lot of these teams are coming prime now, and that, you know, and that is the downside to them, is because where were they preseason? I mean, Notre Dame got the win over Kentucky, but, you know, they lost St. Mary's. You know, that they blew that game.
Yeah.
So it's like, all these teams, you know, Virginia that we talked about had the stubbed their toe against Navy and James Madison. Games that Virginia would not in a million years lose right now. A lot of these teams have changed over, but this is what the tournament's about. You have to perform preseason, or you know, or you're not just you, but your entire conference can suffer.
Okay, we need to keep moving along. Let's talk about a good team, the one he just pulled up.
Well, let's talk about it, Tytel. I pulled up Miami on the left. How good of a team are they with six losses between Tier 2 and Tier 3?
They're decent. They did lose two in a row to start February, bounced back last week, beating Georgia Tech at home, who cares, beating Wake on the road, Tier 1 road win, love it, 18-7 overall. They head to Louisville Wednesday, then they host Virginia on Saturday. They do need to defend the three ball better. 36% allowed from behind the arc, terrible. The only thing from New Jersey that's colder than my luck in Atlantic City, shooting guard Isaiah Wong. He's also from Piscataway, Chad. How did you let him escape? He actually has been solid in the past five games, 13.6 boards a game, but only 2 of 19 from behind the arc. Please tell him to stop shooting threes. I have them as an 11 seed.
I think that's where they are now, because I like them a little more than that.
But there
are a lot of losses there to non-tournament teams, several of which were at home, Griggs. But let's take a look at the upcoming schedule. I believe we have Stalika back with us. Stalika, you missed all the digs on Cincinnati. But the upcoming schedule, I think maybe the games to circle here are especially Duke's game against Wake Forest. And then I think we mentioned the games coming up this weekend, including the, I guess we have Virginia at Miami as a key one there as well.
Virginia.
Well, that's okay. I'm sure we'll have plenty of time to get into UC versus Tulsa.
Yeah. North Carolina, Virginia Tech. If North Carolina goes there and wins, I will relent. I will say, okay, they're at least on the bubble. I don't know if I'll have them solidly in the field. That would be a nice win. I don't think they're good enough to win it, because I just don't think they're good. But that one would be.
Let's keep things moving and go to a good conference. Let's jump over to the Big 12 now, where one score that's not yet on the screen just went final right as we started the show. Kansas State with another win, home win over West Virginia. And Sleeka, let me start with you. Kansas State up to 6-7 overall now, 14-11. Six and seven in conference, 14-11 overall with this West Virginia home win. Is K-State suddenly becoming a tournament team?
Well, I mean, technically, conference record is not going to be a consideration. They're overall record is barely going to be worth consideration. But then again, 2017, Vanderbilt showed us that you could have up to, what, 14 losses, still have a very good overall strength of schedule and still get as high as a number nine seed.
Were they an eight or a nine? Yeah.
Well, they were a nine against Northwestern.
To your point, they were way inside the bubble. Sorry, Stalika, I keep interrupting
you. But getting back to K-State right here, I don't think you can continuously ignore wins at Texas, wins at TCU, the Texas Tech win at home, as well as the Iowa State win, even though that's fading a little bit. Man, had they just hung on against Kansas, they probably would have been in about 95% of people's brackets by now.
Yeah, Kansas State definitely a team to keep a look at. They do have that killer Big 12 schedule the rest of the way, though. Let's talk, though, moving up kind of towards the top of the standings, though. Tytel Baylor was very impressive, I thought, this weekend over what I thought was a red-hot Texas team.
They were, and it was. They got blown out at Kansas to start the month, but big bounce back. Double-digit wins against Kansas State on the road and home to Texas, 21-4 overall. Does not get any easier this week, as it usually does not in this conference. Texas Tech and TCU ahead. The two pieces of news for them are on the injury front. Good news, LJ Cryer could return this week. He's been out for five games with a foot injury. The bad news, of course, Jonathan Chamwa-Chachua, done for the year, left knee injury against the Longhorns. Huge, huge loss, literally and figuratively. They're a two seed now, but I'm worried they're going to lose a couple down the stretch because they're going to miss him in the middle.
Yeah, if you want to go back and watch injuries, do not go back and watch this one. It was not pretty. I'm not shocked that he's going for the season. Unfortunately, it was a shame. But Dorman, I pulled up Oklahoma on the right there. If one took bubble teams, 14-11 overall, same record now as K-State. What do we do with these Sooners teams who has a few good wins?
Last week, I thought they were in big, big trouble, and I was down on them, and all they did was rock Texas Tech. So now they're back on the bubble for me. Their next three games, home to Texas, at Iowa State, at Texas Tech, is going to go a long way towards how they will be feeling going into the conference tournament, because after that, it gets a little easier to end the with Oak State and West Virginia. Oklahoma needs two of these next three. The home game to Texas, they could really, really use. Win one of those road games, and I think you're in decent shape. The record in conference is not good. It's bad, but like someone just, Stalika just mentioned, it's not really, you're not supposed to, the committee doesn't look at your conference record. It's who you've beaten and how good are they and where. Oklahoma is in good shape if they can keep winning games here, and the strength of this conference is really helping them.
Yeah, Joby, over the weekend, they had a 2-point loss at Kansas also. I've got Kansas up there on the left.
Yeah. And they had Kansas dead to rights. They were up.
Yep.
Yeah, it wasn't a case of, oh, well, we just came so close at the end. No, they had a solid, they were constantly up about 5-6. And then about the under 4-minute timeout, Kansas made the flip. And Kansas took the lead just in time. But give Kansas credit. This Kansas team continues to win, continues to lead what is probably the deepest conference, at least is top to bottom, the toughest conference in America. That is the formula, that if Kansas continues on this, people are not recognizing the fact that this is a number one seed in the making. I want to stress that. Number one seed in the making for Kansas right now, if they continue on their path.
Yeah, they are. As we record this, they're leading early against Oklahoma State at home. But we've got great the rest of the upcoming schedule. A lot of games we're circling here. Huge game Wednesday night. Baylor at Texas Tech among them.
Yeah, I think Iowa State, TCU's big. Baylor, Texas Tech, big showcase game.
Texas Tech at Texas also, by the way.
Yeah. And I want to talk about something that – but I mean, people have said, we heard two people just say that the conference standings don't matter. I think that they do. They are on the team sheet, at least the overall conference record. And the thing about the Big 12 that's different from, say, the SEC or the ACC is that it is a balanced double round robin. And I've heard the committee say that conference records don't matter, but I've also heard it used as a reason as to why teams are left out. Typically not out of power leagues, but you know, when they were behind two or three teams that weren't even being discussed, they couldn't rationalize taking a team. I don't think that's the case here, but this is a categorical statistical fact. And whether it matters or not, it's just a coincidence. No team has ever been selected when they're more than three games below 500 in conference play when you factor in the conference tournament. Iowa State, six games below, like Oklahoma, four games below. They're below that threshold. Now, that doesn't mean the committee won't take them, but I don't see how you can just totally ignore that when they've never done it before.
Well, let me ask a quick question, Tytel. You are a selection committee guessing expert here. Look at Iowa State. They're 3-9 in conference. You know, I think you had them as a 7 or 8 seed in your bracket you released yesterday. You know, I mean, how much do you factor conference record in when you look at these teams?
Slim to none. I care that they beat a bunch of teams who are going to make the tournament, like Xavier, Texas Tech, Texas, and Iowa, and possibly a road win at Creighton. I care not if they finish six games above or below 500.
I kind of agree with you there. And I think that, Griggs, I think that this Big 12 this year may prove that categorical thing was more of a coincidence, that teams that finish three or four games below 500 in their conference generally are crappy teams.
Yeah, they generally are. And to your point, this, like, when you look at any of these teams, they all won multiple games. I think everybody did, minus maybe Oklahoma State, against teams that are going in on the first ballot. I don't think I've ever seen an entire conference do that before.
Say this in this particular situation. If Iowa State continues on the percentage path they are, okay, so let's say they finish whatever that would be, 5-13, for instance.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, their overall record, there'll be only two more wins on an, and all of a sudden, their overall record starts to look a little shaky at 18-16, 18-15 with a loss in the conference tournament. Then all of a sudden, their overall record, plus you're going to be just taking on water at that point, then. I mean, they have a chance to turn around.
And their schedule was front loaded.
They're probably going to be okay. But if they continue to be 3-9 level, then that's going to add to the resume, and that's going to knock them out, maybe.
Okay, we do need to keep things moving. We are falling way behind in time here. We got to get this done. So let's go over to the Big Ten, though, which is a conference that unfortunately we gave a little bit of a short time to last week because we were running late in time. I want to give it a little more due. Of course, due to what happened. Dorman, let me bring you back in. I know you wanted to discuss my team here. Rutgers, for the first time in program history, won three straight games against ranked teams, including huge road win at Wisconsin over the weekend. Scarlet Knights, have they gone from being the team that lost at home in Lafayette and totally fell apart at UMass to an NCAA tournament team?
Yeah, they're right on the verge, Chad. Your Scarlet Knights are playing really well. And the one thing they needed was a big road victory to put in that tier one box. And they checked it off this weekend. That is a big bang. You go to Madison and chalk up a victory. That says a lot to me. The next two games, Illinois and then a road trip to Purdue. If they could get even one of those, I really like Rutgers to be in line to get a bid.
Yeah, wait a minute. Not get easier the rest of the way. Go ahead.
No.
Tytel, they have a home loss to Lafayette. Has anyone ever lost at home to Lafayette and got a bid? Can you give me an
maybe
example?
Lehigh with an auto bid for winning?
Well, that's an auto bid. Well, sorry, Chad, they're out.
Maybe Princeton or Penn.
It's a very strange profile when you look at it. But the way this team's been playing, especially the last few weeks here, especially Big Ten play, you're now at 9-5 in conference again. Let's talk about how important conference record is, unlike what I just said.
In this league, it's not at all.
a few other teams to get to here. Stalica, you know, a few other games of note here includes Michigan State, who loses Wisconsin and then comes back and gets a nice win over Indiana this week.
True, but I think that says more about Indiana because the Hoosiers, I think, still only have a road win at Nebraska. Forget, did they win at Maryland or not?
They've got two.
They won at Maryland, yes.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I have to applaud Sparty and Wisconsin for at least getting on the road win exchange program with one another.
Yeah, yep. And Greg's the other another very notable game over the weekend. Purdue down most of the game to Maryland, found a way to technically win the game, whether you consider the lack of foul calls there or not.
Yeah, and I guess what that means is that it keeps them solid. Well, it keeps them within reach of the one line. This has been an odd year. I think you're going to – most of the time when you look at the one seeds, you don't see any losses, well, really at all, but certainly not to teams that miss the field. I think we're going to see multiple one seeds with losses to teams that miss the field this year. So, again, it's coming up. But, yeah, it was important that they win that game.
Yeah, Tytel, on the right there, I just pulled up Michigan.
What did you do that for?
Because he wants to discuss Michigan, a team with a 35 net. They were a top 10 team heading into the season. Any hopes left here?
If there is for Rutgers, there is for Michigan. This team was on life support after losing at Purdue earlier this month, to fall to 11-9. They overcame a double-digit deficit to beat Penn State on the road, albeit by one freaking point. Then they destroyed the Boilers by 24 in the rematch. They did run out of gas against the Buckeyes last weekend. Very tough road trip this week at Iowa, at Wisconsin. But Hunter Dickinson is really leading the resurgence. He only had 9 points against Northwestern last month. Past six games, 22 points, 8 boards, 2 blocks a game. Outside the bubble, but certainly trending upward if they keep beating the Boilers by 24.
He mentioned that game at Iowa, Joby. I pulled Iowa up here on the left. Here's another team. This team belongs to the ACC with this profile, don't they?
Yeah.
Exactly. And here's the ironic thing is, I think they, along with the entire ACC, is like going, Virginia, please get to 75. Stop this 77 crap. Because that would throw so many teams into a tier one win. And so, yeah, whether it's Wake, whether it's Iowa. Iowa has done a very good ACC impression, as it were. But look at the actual wins. I mean, like I said, at Virginia is actually a good win. Utah State's on... You know, it's kind of bubblicious. It, at this year, it's if you haven't messed up, if you haven't lost to Lafayette, you know, I mean, that to be blunt, yeah.
I like Rutgers so much.
I get it. Let's take a look at the upcoming schedule here, the Big Ten, real quick. Griggs, which games are you circling here? Maybe just pretty much
Whiskey at Indiana. I think Indiana might – I don't want to say that they're in trouble, but there might be more urgency there than what you think. Illinois at Rutgers. Because as good as Rutgers is playing, when you look at the remainder of their schedule, there's no easy teams in it. And then – Iowa.
It's kind of funny that a home game against the first place team in the conference may be one of their easiest games left of the season.
Yeah, potentially. And then Iowa, because Iowa just needs to do something just to get in the discussion. Okay. So
let's jump over to the SEC here. Dorman, let me go to you as the SEC standings come up. And Auburn lost last Tuesday to Arkansas, did bounce back with a win over A&M. Number one team in the nation, number two team in the nation, as the voters put them. Where are you with this Auburn team?
Because of the recency bias and the recency loss versus Arkansas, most of the voters knocked them down a peg and brought Gonzaga up. The schedule is brutal. They're playing in the SEC. Every game is tough, whereas Gonzaga doesn't have as rough as a go. I probably would have voted Gonzaga this week too over Auburn, but that's just because of the difficulty in schedule that Auburn has, where Gonzaga does not.
Right. And the other team that is very fast moving now, up to 6 wins in a row here, Griggs, the Kentucky Wildcats on the right. I know you love them.
Yeah. And, you know, they won on the road at Kansas. They won on the road against Alabama. If they get this win at Tennessee and Arkansas, I think that they've done enough already to get up onto the one line. I like how they're playing. I know that in a typical year, Kentucky doesn't start off going 100 miles an hour, but they typically get there by January, and they're there. You know, they started off going 40 or 50 miles an hour, but they are going on all cylinders. And when I look at the schedule, I see a lot of tough games, particularly at Tennessee and at Arkansas. But I think these are games that they can win. And they would be my pick to win the SEC tournament if it were starting today. They really would be. I think they could win the whole thing the way they're playing.
They are red hot. Another team that was red hot, Titel, until their last game is Arkansas.
Yeah, but still a bit of a roller coaster of a season. Started 9-0, lost 5-6, won another 9 in a row, including an overtime upset of top-ranked Auburn, and then lost a one-point heartbreaker at Bama last Saturday. Yeah. They should beat Missouri on the road on Tuesday, but then four of their final five, home games against Kentucky and LSU, and a home and home with Tennessee. One reason they lost to the Tide, 6 of 21 behind the arc, which sadly reflects their 31% shooting from three-point range this season. And I know everybody wants to give the SEC Player of the Year Award, if not the National Player of the Year Player of the Year Award, to Oscar Tshiebwe of Kentucky. But I want you to at least look at JD Notae's stats. Number two in the conference at 19 points a game, leading the conference with 2.5 steals a game. He does it on both ends. I have them as a 7 seed.
As a 7 seed, okay. Joby, LSU, a team that was going in the wrong direction until recently, but back-to-back wins. Have the Tigers turned it around?
Yes, without a doubt. Good. And LSU, I mean, LSU was never in danger of approaching the bubble. Unless it just completely, yeah, unless they didn't see a win the rest of the year. But they've definitely steadied things. Two solid wins puts them back into wearing white category. I don't know if they kind of blew their chance at the protected seed lines with their recent swoon. But this team is finally finding themselves once again, getting hot once again, dangerous. I think they remind me a lot of Arkansas, to be honest. I think there's a lot of similarities there in the flow of their season, as Titel pointed out. And, you know, you're going to be seeing, you will be putting LSU somewhere in your brackets come a few weeks from now.
Real quick, the upcoming schedule in the SEC, Stalika, big game tomorrow night, of course, Kentucky, Tennessee. Anything else you're looking forward to this week?
If I want to go a little bit further down, I'm thinking, is Mississippi State finally going to get a road win in Alabama? Probably not. Will they finally get one at Sunday? They better get it at Missouri, but the Tigers have shown they're probably capable of beating just about anyone in this conference if they can actually play a full 40.
Yeah, I think the other two games on Saturday, Alabama, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Arkansas, definitely want to circle those.
And it is also noteworthy that Missouri and Mississippi State are going to do a back-to-back on Friday, Sunday.
Yeah, they are. I think that's probably a makeup game there. But Sleeka, let me stick with you, jump over to the Big East, your conference. Your Xavier Musketeers, at least they did something on Friday that the Cincinnati Bengals couldn't do. They won a game.
Oh.
Are we sure that was Xavier and not Syracuse actually getting the win with the student section decked out in orange?
Yeah.
One of the key things Xavier did in that game was they got guys like RJ Cole and Sanogo into early foul trouble for the Huskies. And if you go towards the second half, where they kept them at arm's length, but Danny Hurley and I think another UConn player slapping a ball in frustration. So also helps to give Xavier at least 3 free points towards the end of that game. So it gave them a game they badly needed after missing an opportunity in Newark against Seton Hall earlier in the week.
Yeah, another very notable game, Dorman, this week was Providence, who really could have lost that game to DePaul at home.
Yeah.
Bad.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I'm going to chalk it up to Providence looking ahead to tomorrow night in the big one with Villanova. I think they've been waiting for this. This should be a fantastic basketball game tomorrow night. And I'm going to give them a little pass, Providence, because I think they're really good on the DePaul. They got through, they got the win, but I do believe they were looking ahead for the showdown tomorrow night.
Yeah, can we pull up Providence, Jed?
Okay, I'll pull Providence real quick. Griggs, you got comments on them?
Yeah, I do. Just real quick, when you look, this has been pointed out before, the discrepancies between the merit rankings and the predictive rankings, but I also think Providence is on the verge of doing something amazing. They've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Congratulations. This is a great show here. Griggs can count to 8.
They've got eight games. They have 8 wins by 5 points or less, and I think they're trying to set the all-time record. And it was very good of the 9. I missed the DePaul one. 9 games by 5 points or less. They're trying to set the all-time record.
I'll give Providence credit for this. This team is undefeated in games of 10 points or less. Undefeated.
So if it's a close game, forget it.
Joby, on the right there, I pulled up Marquette, who had the first time in a while had a bad week.
Ugly loss, yeah. But
two losses losing to Butler.
But losing to Butler is harsh. Because this Butler team, I don't care if they have their moments. No, this Butler team's not very good. Marquette really needed to take care of business if they wanted to continue the rise. This is like LSU I mentioned before. That they were looking, okay, maybe we can, with the right things, maybe if Houston continues to stumble, maybe we can slide into a protected seed spot. I know on our Hoops HD shows, Marquette is constantly talked about around the 4, and I think they wind up at the 5 a lot. Butler loss kicks them back a spot, and they're going to have to regroup, they're going to have to come back, and they're going to have to win. And they don't have just a ton of opportunity to do so. I mean, you could say at Creighton, could turn into that. But for the most part, they're playing the dregs of the conference. I mean, Georgetown, DePaul, Butler, St. John's. So they might have missed their opportunity with barring a strong run in the Big East, where there will be opportunities to rack up some nice resume builders.
Tytel, on the left there, I've got the Creighton Blue Jays. A team that a lot of people have them right around the bubble, but you got to love the top of their profile, even if you hate, really, really hate their tier 3 loss that they have.
I've been saying for a month that I'm not putting them in because they lost to the Sun Devils, but I got to give them a little credit because they did lose at Seton Hall a week ago, bounce back. They beat Butler and Georgetown to improve to 15-8. They're currently winning the rematch with the Hoyas by 17 as we speak. They had to DePaul Thursday. That's winnable. I'm not sure if I've ever seen a team start 3 guys with the same first name, but Ryan Nemhard at point, Ryan Hawkins at forward, Ryan Kalkbrenner at center. Like, these guys are good. They've been terrible from 3-point range this season, 31%. But Hawkins tied his career high. He made 8 on Saturday. And then tonight they're making 8 in the first half against the Hoyas. I think Coach McDermott should let them keep shooting them. I have them just inside the bubble.
Just pass it to Ryan.
On the other hand, they were fortunate not to get swept by Butler. Let's not forget, they only won by 2 at home against the Bulldogs.
Yeah, but it just seems to me like, while there is that Arizona State loss, a lot of teams that we have way up the seed list have done way worse. I just think that they're better than what they're getting credit for.
The upcoming schedule here, the huge Villanova-Providence game. Also, Wednesday, big Seton Hall-UConn rematch. Remember, this was that great overtime game earlier in the season when they played at the Hall. We've got a few other games of note, including, I guess, Xavier at UConn on Saturday, Marquette at Creighton coming up on Sunday. But let's jump over to the Pac-12 conference. And Tytel, let me stick with you, because USC did something that they hadn't done all season. They picked up a win of note finally this weekend, and a pretty big one at that.
So I know Joby's been trying to keep them out of the bracket all week long, and I know they almost lost to Pacific on Tuesday, but they did hang on somehow to beat the Bruins at home by 3. They're 21-4. Drew Peterson staking his claim for the streakiest shooter in the country. Previous 4 games, 0-12. UCLA, 4-5 behind the arc. Good news, they could finish 25-4 by the end of February. Bad news, in March, they get Arizona coming to LA, and they host then they head to UCLA, for the rematch. Not sure if big man Isaiah Moley will be recovered from his broken nose by then. I certainly hope so, if they want to have any chance. They're a 7 seed in my book.
Right. Before they get that last game of February, they are at Oregon. And Dorman, that would be a huge game for an Oregon Ducks team that really shot itself in the foot this week with a game against Cal.
Wow.
You can't afford to lose that game. When Oregon did what they did in the non-conference, which was next to nothing, and you cannot lose those games. This is still the Pac-12's probably best shot to get another bid after the top 3. But that really killed him and really hurt him. And again, in this conference, there's not much to be had. They get Arizona, USC, and UCLA once more each. They have to pull out at least one, if not 2, to feel good.
Yeah, when you look at this conference, it really looks like it's going back to that three-bid conference again at the moment, yeah. Unless either at Oregon or maybe even Stanford, who still has an outside shot to make a run, could do something. But it may be too late for Stanford at this point even.
Yeah.
Upcoming schedule, though, this week, we've got USC and UCLA are hosting the Washington schools. Oregon and Arizona, probably the game to circle on Saturday, is probably the only really notable game in the league, unfortunately, this week. But
I don't want to say Oregon needs that one, but holy crap, would it help them out?
Absolutely.
Let's Sleek, let's jump over to the West Coast Conference. And you did a bracket today, which you thought that BYU is not even a tournament team, even though they did bounce back with a pair of road wins. Do you want to explain why BYU is out at the moment, other than they're a bracketing nightmare with the fact they don't play on Sundays?
I don't even care about the bracketing nightmare, but when you're also losing to the aforementioned Pacific team and not even looking that good against teams like San Francisco and Gonzaga, teams that are going to be in the tournament right here, and these were losses at home by, I think they were double digits, and plus BYU, they're running out of chances here. They're going to have to cash in at St. Mary's, I think, to really – I guess be a little more of a solid team right here, because other than that, their only real opportunity to cash in is going to be the West Coast Conference tournament, and they're going to have to do multiple steps of the ladder now.
Yeah, and Chad, it's not like BYU buried these teams. They played weak teams and sweat them out. Like
they beat Loyola Marymount by one, like for tier three, and then they beat an awful. Not just bad, like Loyola Marymount, so they're the bottom half of the West Coast Conference. Pepperdine is last for a reason in that conference, and they were down. and they barely squeaked out a win over Pepperdine late at night. I stayed up for that awful game. And so, no, right now, BYU is actually not playing. That I understand the resume. I understand preseason they did quite well. But BYU is not playing well. And so there are a lot of teams. We just started off with the American tonight who are playing well. Who do you think is playing better right now? SMU and Memphis or BYU? I'll go with the American.
Well, BYU, even if they lose to St. Mary's, the last two games, very winnable. I mean, you can't afford to lose those. You're still going to have, you know, a few wins going in. You know, you win some game against some Pacific or San Diego in the first round, and then you lose to a Gonzaga or a St. Mary's in the West Coast Conference tournament.
I do stress that BYU in the bracket matrix is 12. In bracket matrix, now that's not everything, but they are at 12 there. So you lose to St. Mary's, it's okay. That's another loss, and you win two bad ones. If they might be out, especially with Bid Thieves, if they merely beat crap and lose to other bubble teams like St. Mary's.
So the St. Mary's road game is huge then this week.
I think it's very important for them. At a minimum, a St. Mary's win will mean, okay, you just have to take care of business of the teams in front of you. If they do not get that St. Mary's win, they might have to do something special in the term. I'm not saying beat Gonzaga, but I don't know how the structure of who they'd face, but they'd have to beat a St. Mary's in the tournament, San Francisco in the tournament to do.
Titel, on the left is the now number one, unanimous number one team. Well, not unanimous, but both polls, number one team.
Consensus, for sure.
Consensus, Gonzaga Bulldogs. Though they do sell their two toughest road games in the conference to go.
Yeah, I'm really worried about them, Chad. I mean, they've won 14 in a row. They're one of three teams who are undefeated in conference play, along with Murray and South Dakota State. They're going to destroy Pepperdine on Wednesday, and then you see the three in a row to finish. They're unstoppable in the paint on both offense and defense. They're number one in the nation shooting from two-point range, 62%. They're number four in the nation defending from two-point range, 41% allowed. Drew Timmy, he only scored 8 points against Loyola last month. Five games since then, he's back on track. 16 points, 8 boards a game. They're the best team in the nation. They're the one seed.
Yeah, and I thought St. Mary's might be able to give them a game over the weekend. They did not.
They gave them a game. They played. It was a regulation game.
Here's the upcoming schedule in the West Coast Conference. The game of note is the one we already discussed, BYU at St. Mary's. Also, San Francisco's got a road trip to Pacific coming up tomorrow night, and then a road trip to St. Mary's on Thursday after. So that's a huge week for the Gales this week in this conference. Dorman, Mountain West time. I know you're a big fan of this conference. And woo. How about the Wyoming Cowboys breaking the top 25 poll this week? Both polls.
Well deserved. Finally, some love for this Mountain West conference. I think this conference is going to be heard of come March. A lot of the so-called experts in the East like to knock this conference around, but Wyoming, Boise State, Colorado State, these teams are really good, and they have go-to scores when they need to, and they can lock you down on D. The Mountain West is really going to make some noise. I really believe that. Now, the one team on the fence here is San Diego State. Wherever you look, they're just either right in or right out. They got plenty of work left to do, but they have the opportunities. If the Mountain West is going to get four in, San Diego State better get hot quickly.
Yeah, Tytel, I get a few thoughts on the Aztecs also.
Yeah, they did start February with a brutal one-point loss at Colorado State, but they did bounce back 3 wins in a row, 15-6 overall. They now have a brutal 3-game stretch ahead, Utah State, Fresno State, Boise State. And as usual, the Aztecs get it done with defense. Top 35 in the nation in field goal percent allowed from each of one-point land and two-point land and three-point land. And senior Matt Bradley, he only scored 7 in an frankly unwatchable 42-37 home loss to Boise last month. And the 7 games since then exploded, 22.6 boards, 3 assists a game. Wow. I have them as a 12 seed, and they really need to like not go 0-3 in this 3-game stretch ahead.
That's interesting because they're straddling the bubble, as both Tytel and Dorman just pointed out. I think it's actually good that they have this 3-game stretch that they have, because this is a chance for them to get way inside of it.
I don't know, way inside. You've only got one tournament team in there, so I don't know if it's way inside, but it is inside.
I think if they win those three, they're going to be okay.
3-0. If you're talking about 3-0, yeah. Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Now, what's ironic here is a couple years ago, San Diego State was undefeated, but guess which team actually gave them the most trouble at home? San Jose State. And look what's coming up on the 25th right here.
Yeah, and the other thing, I mean, this conference doing remarkably well since the arrival of Tim Miles.
Okay. Real quick, Colorado State.
Raising the profile.
Stalica, the game of the best sports event on Sunday was Colorado State's win at Boise State, was it not?
It was a great game.
There was a swing of about 20 points in this game because Colorado State actually jumped out to a 10-point lead in the first half. Boise State whittled it down and got to as high as, I think, 9 or 10 points in the second half before the Rams were actually able to force overtime. And unfortunately, I had to go to work last night, so I didn't get to see the overtime, but I understand people were celebrating across the country. I think they were confused on their team colors, though.
All right. Great win for the Rams. Yeah. Wow. Well played. That was great.
Upcoming schedule here in the conference. And I think that really there's only one game here really worth circling. That, of course, is Saturday when we have some front range action between Air Force and Wyoming.
Yes. Oh, the Air Force Wyoming, the front range.
There's the rest of the schedule, though. We've got one more conference to get to here before we and one other team beyond that, though. Joby, Atlantic 10 Conference.
Yeah.
Davidson, it looks like they're just barely finding ways to win games these days. Struggle with St. Joe's, struggled even with Duquesne tonight.
And lost to URI. So
lost to URI, thank you.
Davidson's in, barring a remarkable fall apart, but the A-10 generally, it's very similar to the American, in my opinion, except for, no Houston. Davidson's no Houston. But in that, the number of that, the bubble, I think, out right now are a lot of teams knocking at the door. I mean, a lot of teams. We're talking, Dayton, VCU, Bonnie's winning tonight. St. Louis probably fading back, but there are a lot of teams in those. The NIT will be full of Atlantic 10 teams. Will one of them pop out? That's the question. And I don't know. Davidson might have to give away some wins for that to happen. So, right now, the Bonnies.
I don't know that Davidson has too many wins to give away. I don't know that Davidson has too many wins to give away here.
I'm with Chad on this one. Yeah.
If they give away more than one, honestly, the rest of the way, especially with that only five regular season games left, I think that they're going to be in trouble themselves.
And when you consider that three of the five are Duquesne, Fordham, and Mason, I mean, they just can't be losing those. St. Louis, a decent team, but you need to win that game at home if you're a tournament team. I could forgive them for losing at Dayton. It's really hard to win at Dayton. But if they don't win four of those, I don't know that they're a lock.
Tytel, how about VCU? Could they be the team on their little three-game winning streak in with not much challenges left in the regular season?
Thank God, because you talked earlier about, does a team who's ever lost to Lafayette make it? How about a team that lost to Dayton at home by 30 points in Tier 2 ever going to make it? So they did bounce back, three straight wins after that horrible loss, 16-7. They should win at Fordham Tuesday. Tough home game against Richmond on Friday. Great perimeter defense. They only allow 28% behind the arc, number six in the nation. They do need to clean up the free throw shooting. 67% is not going to get it done. I'm still not sure what to make of freshman Jaden Nunn. So day after Thanksgiving, he scores a career-high 21 against a good UConn team. Then he starts 2022 with 10 straight games in single digits. Then has his best all-around game of the season last Saturday, 15 points, 6 boards, 4 assists, 2 steals, no turnovers, and a huge win at Mason. They're outside the bubble, but they're playing really well, finally.
Do you think there's a path to an at-large bid here still?
Barely. I mean, it will probably require a win over Davidson at some point. And luckily, even though they don't have a lot of good Tier 1 opportunities in the regular season, I think they could get a couple in the early rounds of the tournament.
If the standings stay where they are, Davidson would be the finals of the A-10. So
yeah, and that would get them in. Yeah. So Rhodey up 20. Oh, no. Dayton just tied Rhodey early in the second half as we record this.
Okay. Okay.
Just to jump in, St. Bonaventure is not dead yet. They just took two games against St. Louis. A St. Louis team I think is decent to solid. St. Bonaventure will give anyone in this conference a run for their money come March in Washington, D.C. at the A-10 tournament. The Bonnies are still alive.
Still alive, but they really can't afford another regular season loss, especially when you see that rest of that season schedule up there.
They need to run the table.
And they've just not proven that they could do that. Here's the upcoming schedule. Some of the notable games, St. Louis at Davidson, maybe one of the most notable games on this schedule. One more team I want to pull up here. Let's pull up the Ohio Valley standings, something we normally do during Under the Radar. But Griggs, Murray State in the top 25 for the second straight week. One of the three remaining teams that's undefeated in conference play, along with the Zags and South Dakota State. They struggled a little bit this week, though, in both their games, at Tennessee State and at Moorhead.
Yeah, Tennessee State was a real head scratcher. I don't know if part of it was drinking the Kool-Aid of breaking the rankings, down double digits at halftime, but totally dominated the second half, won by double digits. At Moorhead State on Saturday, Moorhead, I don't believe, had lost at home all year prior to that, if I'm not mistaken, trailed for seemingly 38 minutes in that game. But then, they struggled. They couldn't get any transition points. A lot of what they wanted to do or the normally do, they weren't able to do, but they still won. And to me, I know that this sounds like a backhanded compliment. When you can have a bad game, when what you normally do well, you're not able to do, and you can still win a game on the road like that, I actually think that that's a sign of strength. I think that they win out easily and go through and win the conference tournament. And I don't know. Even if they don't win the conference tournament, I think this team can go in on the first ballot.
Moorhead was not only unbeaten at home, they had also beaten Belmont at home. So, you got to give Murray points for winning there.
Murray with just two losses on the season, one at Auburn, the other at the bad loss to East Tennessee State, way down there in Tier 3. Easy week this week, I think. Home against Austin Peay, who's pretty bad. Road test, but at UT Martin, who is very, very bad.
Very bad.
Their big game is coming up February 24th, so we should see them in the top 25 again next week and be discussing them again on the 60 report. But on that note, let me pull this down here and run through each of you for any other final thoughts. Let me start, Joby. Let me start with you.
Well, when we were going through the Mountain West, we were talking about how the conference has gotten deeper, et cetera. Usually in this particular situation, when you have a mid-tier non-Power 5 conference, you see teams beat each other up. What that means is everybody falls back and everybody kind of goes closer to the bubble. Instead, what we're seeing with Wyoming in the rankings, Colorado State with the nice win, what we're seeing is a lifting up, which is kind of a neat thing. And a lot of it has to do with the nets that those top teams established. And when you combine it with San Diego State, I mentioned in this forum, when it happened, the St. Mary's San Diego State being a huge deal for the conference of the Mountain West. When you have all of a sudden those three, now you do have San Diego State with opportunities for wins to get a fourth team in. And so it's kind of cool how the Mountain West has defied gravity a little bit that normally hits those conferences. So compliments to the folks on the Front Range and beyond.
Yes, the Mountain West Conference. Yes. Dorman.
I took some heat earlier in the show. We were discussing the Big Ten, and then we got to Rutgers. And besides Chad, I heard there was a lot of rumblings, and I'm going to stick to my guns here. I didn't say Rutgers was in yet. I said there was a path. But when I look at Rutgers' resume, there's wins, mostly at home, but a few in the quad one, tier one area. And then you go to resumes. You look at North Carolina. You look at Iowa. You look at Wake Forest. They have nothing to show. So I understand one game they lost to Lafayette Rutgers, but I'm going to look past one bad day and one bad game. They have shown they can beat good teams at home, and then they put a game together with Wisconsin. When you show me or the committee you can win games like that, I can look past one bad day against the Lafayette or so. When you are piling up wins, I think Rutgers has a path to the tournament, and the Lafayette will not kill them.
And you know what, David? Though I got to back up a little bit here. I saw people jump Memphis over Rutgers and even into the field after they went at Houston, when the same exact day Rutgers won at Wisconsin. And winning at Wisconsin is harder than winning at Houston, I would submit to you. How did Memphis jump over Rutgers when Rutgers picked up a better road win on the same day?
Chad, I can give you a quick shot down and dirty. It's because people are being lazy and looking at the net. That's exactly why. Memphis is in the 40s. Rutgers is still in the 80s. Rutgers continues to do what they are. They're going to get to beyond that 75 marker and into the 60s. Rutgers will be in at that point. Or they will lose games, remain in the 80s, and deservedly be out.
Chad, I have spoken to Tom Burnett, and in a rare situation, even if Rutgers wins the Big Ten tournament, because of the loss to Lafayette, they're not taking him.
Salika.
I think I had suggested earlier that we bring up a team like Iowa. How is Iowa number 23 in the net right here? I mean, to me, this is even more offensive than profiles like Wake or North Carolina when you consider that Iowa is going to have a lot more chances at actually getting some tier one wins, home or away, in the Big Ten. In fact, I think their best conference win to date is so far against Indiana. And this is a team against a team that's done virtually nothing on the road right here. So where are the opportunities going to come for Iowa, and how much longer before we finally decide maybe you're going to be the top seed in the NIT this year?
Or lower than that if they can't win some games. Yeah.
They could really use some guy named Jack Nungy right now, but he's become an indispensable force for the Xavier Musketeers.
There you go. Tytel, I'm going to bring up a picture for you here.
Amazing how far a team drops off after losing the National Player of the Year, isn't it, Stalika? Yes, I wanted to give a special shout out to this gentleman right here. He made two NCAA tournaments as a player at Oakland, then became a graduate manager for the Spartans, then became an assistant at his alma mater, then joined Porter Moser at Loyola for their Final Four run in 2018, then was named head coach last April at age 29 when Moser left for Oklahoma. All he's done this year as a young coach is go 19-5 and lead the Missouri Valley Conference. A very happy Valentine's Day wish to Loyola head coach Drew Valentine.
Oh, there we go. Griggs, I know you're going to finish off the show, and I know you wanted a blind resume at the start of it, so I'm going to let you do it. Here's the David Griggs.
Well, here we go. Yeah, these are the blind resume. Well, first of all, I just wanted to say I agree with Dorman's assessment on Rutgers. I just don't want to give Chad the satisfaction of hearing me say it. But anyway, like, yes, we have some blind resumes here. And one of these teams is going to the NCAA tournament. We have to decide which one. Chad, you look perplexed.
I'm waiting for somebody to chip. Oh.
The left. I like the team on the left.
Team I know because of the J&G 358 who the team on the right is.
We're taking one
and
of these
they
teams.
They almost won tonight. They almost won.
I tell you, you want to go team on the right or team on the left?
I want to go referees if I have to choose a winner of this matchup.
Look at the team on the right. Like, look at all those wins at home. I mean, just
let's see what we got. Oh,
that's yes. So here we go. Like San Jose State, coached by Tim Miles. See, you didn't see that on the blind resume going into the NCAA tournament because via our blind resume test.
Fantastic. Yeah. This is why we don't let Griggs host the show, people.
It would be a better show.
I do want to thank everyone for joining us.
Why don't I host the show?
We'll be back later this week with an Under the Radar and a Bracket Rundown show. But on behalf of David Dorman, Joby Forced up here.
I can host those.
Griggs below me. John Tytel and John Slika to his sides. I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. Talk to you again real soon.